Welcome our speaker tonight. It's Patrick from Doylestown, and he is at the Fog Lifters Home Group.
I'm not used to a podium and a microphone. My name's Patrick, I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to welcome a newcomer to your first meeting. One other thing I want to ask too, is there anyone that drank in the past day, by any chance? Anyone? No? All right, good. The only reason I ask that is because I'm a chronic relapser. Coming on AA for a little over 30 years. Those are my first AA meeting at 16, and today I have, I guess I should start one more thing. My home group is Fog Lifters, and my sobriety date's May 21st of last year, so I got about a year and a half, and it's the fourth time I've had a year, and I've had over 9 months, like six times. So I understand what it's like to continue to go back out and not understand exactly why I continue to go back out, because I didn't understand why. I had no idea why. But we'll start back at the beginning. So I grew up in Northeast Philly, normal family, like I was raised good, didn't want for anything, I wasn't abused, there was nothing bad going on. Irish Catholic family, a lot of drinking going on. I just remember from a real young age, I had a lot of fear. I always felt different. I felt like, I kind of felt like a freak, you know? I don't understand exactly why. I was always good at sports, I was always kind of outgoing. I could read, I could write, like everything was normal about me except for the way I felt. At some point, like Bill in the book, I discovered alcohol. I don't remember the exact age. I know a lot of people can remember the exact first time they took a drink. I don't. I do remember it when I took a drink. It was like a spiritual experience, right? It was like the most amazing thing that ever happened to me. I put alcohol in me and I became whole. And I identify with that feeling like immediately. So I think I was around 11 or 12. My parents were divorced. My dad was an alcoholic. He was in addiction. He wasn't around a lot. And my mom was young. She was 17 when she had me. So she drank. You know, I mean, I don't know if I'd call her an alcoholic, but she certainly had her problems with alcohol. And I grew up in Northeast Philly, and this is kind of the way it was. You know, like I grew up right after the baby boomers, and everyone on the corner. When I grew up, I didn't have any goals. Like I didn't want to be a scientist, or I didn't want to go to the moon. Like I wanted to be like my uncle, who was on the corner drinking and drugging all the time. And actually, that's what happened to me. I became like my uncle, drinking and drugging all the time. Like that was my role model. But that's where I grew up with, right? So there was alcohol everywhere. Everyone was drinking and drugging. Primarily, alcohol is my drug of choice or my first malady, if you will. But there's other things involved, and I'll keep it in the cult pretty much tonight. So I started drinking around 11 or 12, and it progressed rapidly. By 14, I was breaking into houses. And I wasn't stealing people's money, and I wasn't stealing diamond rings, and I was stealing alcohol, right? I would go into their house when they were away or during the day, and I would steal their alcohol. And that was my sole reason for breaking into their house. So at the age of 14, I progressed to the point where I'm breaking into people's houses to take alcohol, right? To steal their alcohol. And, I got caught, and when I got caught, it was like, I had a newspaper route. I used to just dump the papers down the sewer, you know, like any good newspaper boy would do that's drunk and high at the time. Like, that's kind of what you did, you know, you just dump it down the sewer. But I think I stayed with it for about 2 or 3 weeks to pay back the bottle of liquor, right? And that was like the first instance where I got in trouble for alcohol. At this point, my parents were divorced, like I said, and I'd moved from Northeast Philly to South Jersey, which only made my separation, feeling of separation, a lot worse, because I was used to city life, right? And I moved to South Jersey. When I say South Jersey, I don't mean like Mount Laurel or Cherry Hill. I mean Pennsville, which is right by the Delaware Memorial Bridge, which I don't know if you've ever been there, but there's nothing there. And so I'm like a city boy put in this country place, and like, I'm totally separate. I don't know anybody. I feel completely like a freak. I feel completely different. And that's perpetuated my alcoholism. I hooked up, obviously, with the wrong crowd practically immediately. And the next 2 or 3 years were just, they're kind of a blur, to be honest with you. I was young, so I wasn't drunk all the time, but I was always looking for a drink. I was always trying to get a drink. Every time I put a drink in me, I got drunk. I wouldn't even put a drink in me without getting drunk. I was always stealing. I was always finding a way to get more alcohol. So I progressed to high school. I remember the first day of high school, I went and drunk. My mom would have a liquor cabinet. And I would take like a little bit of each one, everything, and just mix it all up, and I would guzzle it just straight. I remember like clench my fist and just guzzle it just to get a buzz as fast as I could. So my first day of high school, I went in drunk. I went up playing baseball, and I was pretty good at sports. And I used to go to practice drunk. I used to go to games drunk. Like, I was always drunk. Drunk or high, one or the other, but mainly drunk. And then when I was 16, I got in a fight with a cop in Pittman. And I went up getting court committed to a rehab Fairmont Institute, which is a dual diagnosis place, which I guess because of my age, there weren't a lot of adolescent facilities around. And so most of the guys that were in there with me, they had some type of other mental disorder. I didn't. I only had alcoholism. And me and like two other guys kind of hooked up in there. And I wound up getting kicked out of there in like 10 days. So I'm 16 years old. I'm in my first rehab. I'm already breaking into houses. I'm already fighting cops. I'm already kicked out of rehab. Like, my future's not looking too bright here. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the path that I would have chosen in retrospect. But so I got out and I just continued on. And 2.5 months later, I was thrown back in rehab when I finally went to court. And I stayed in there for 3 months, almost 3 months. And I got out. And so I'm 17 years old. I'm in high school. I was going to AA meetings. And I don't remember back then, but I don't remember any talk about a spiritual awakening. And I certainly don't remember any talk about a spiritual malady. Like, to me, the awakening or a spiritual experience was like cleaning the ashtrays. That was like the big commitment, was you had to clean the ashtrays at the end of the night. And I was like the only young person in there. There was no one else. I mean, there really wasn't. There was one other guy that was my age, and he was like in and out. I really wasn't friends with him. And I managed to stay sober for a year. Don't remember when I drank again. I was 18 years old, and I wound up drinking. And same thing, just picked up right where I left off. Wasn't any big deal, you know. It was just like, every time that I put alcohol in me, I couldn't stop drinking. I knew that for a fact. And when I stopped drinking, there was usually an event that occurred, like I ran out of money, or I got in trouble, or something happened. But I always went back to alcohol. And in 19, I got sober again. But I had a girlfriend at the time. She left me, and like all good alcoholics, like, I'll go back to AA. You know, I'm like 19 years old going back to AA. Like, it's just, it's not the way this is supposed to be turning out, Patrick. But so anyway, I went back to AA. I got sober for another year. And, you know, at that point, my life was pretty directionless. I actually had I didn't graduate high school. I was kicked out of high school twice. Somehow I got a baseball scholarship. And in the first year, you can look back at my grades. And like, the first year, I had really good grades. And then I started drinking again. The second year, I had really bad grades and got kicked out of it. Well, they revoked my scholarship. So I stopped going to, I stopped going to college, and I moved back up to Northeast Philly. Not with the intent of staying sober, but just with the intent of getting back to where I always considered Northeast Philly my home. So if you had a home, like, you can always go back home to. That was my home. It was my grandmom's home. The door was always open. So I moved back up to Northeast Philly, and then it just really took off. Because sometime in high school, I discovered cocaine. And so those two were mixed for me, primarily alcohol first, but they were always hand in hand. Another 3 years of just complete oblivion. Every dime I had, I spent on alcohol and drugs. If I didn't have a dime, I was stealing it or I was borrowing it. I was going to get it any way I could. 24 years old, the girl that broke up when I was 19, we met back up. I wound up marrying her later, but, 24 years old, I decided to get sober again. So I did what I had always done before, which is I went back to AA, right? And I did. I went back to AA, and I got sober. I wound up staying sober for 11 years. Through that time, every time I had gone back in AA, my life got, like, dramatically better. Like that, like, almost immediately, right? I was sober. I started showing up at work. I could get a job. I did like all the stuff you were supposed to do when I went back to AA. So that's what happened this time. I went back to AA and I was really involved. I think my second year in, I was in a group rep. I was chairing meetings. I was doing all the commitments. And gradually I wound up getting a job. When I started, I was working for Mayflower, and I was a mover, and I wound up working for this bank down in Delaware. My mom was living in Delaware, and I moved back down with her. And I wound up getting a job at a bank, and I worked my way up through this bank. I don't have a degree. I don't have a high school diploma, and I wound up working my way up through this bank for a really good position. But anyway, so I'm 24, 25, 26, good, good, good. 27, I start to trail off on meetings a little bit. And not because, it wasn't like I'm not going to AA, or I hate AA, or I never want to go to AA. It was just like a night here, a night there, a night here, a night there. And then, like, all of a sudden, within like 6 to 9 months, I'm not going to any meetings. So 27 years old, I got like 3.5 years sobriety or whatever it is. Not going to any meetings at all. And I've always had an addictive personality, like literally from the get-go, obsessive, right? And I hit a golf ball. And it was like a spiritual experience. I swear to God in my life, I am not bullshitting. Like, it was like, oh my God. So now I became addicted to golf to the point, and this is an honest to God's true story, to the point where my wife said to me one time, I wish I was a golf club because at least you hold the golf club. Right? And that's kind of where I was. And I don't say it like really jokingly. I say it because it's kind of sad. You know, that I was like so obsessed with this sport. And the whole point of that is just like anything I did that could get me out of myself, I became addicted to. There was a time when it was porn. You know what I mean? Like I became addicted to porn. I became addicted to going to strip club. I became addicted to anything that made me feel good that got me out of myself. over that whole 11-year period, we had our problems like off and on, and we had gone to marriage counseling. I think I had gone back to AA at one point. But there was a point in there where I realized I never thought about drinking anymore. Like, it was gone. And you're talking to me, I think I was right around 4 years or something, 4 or 5 years, and I remember recognizing that. And I didn't think I needed AA anymore. I really didn't. Like, I had already stopped going to meetings, but I never thought about drinking, so I just figured, hey, I'm good, you know? And the next 5 years were really, my addictions were coming out sideways in all kinds of different ways. I didn't have the resentments yet. They were coming later. I didn't have... I did have a lot of fear, but mainly the resentment thing. So the next 5 years, I went working my way up through the bank, and this is kind of like really where my story begins, because I thought I had made it. You know, I was married to a beautiful woman. I went out learned high school. She was loving my life, and we built a big house, and it was 2005, 2004, and she wanted to get a divorce. Now, I didn't see it coming. I don't know why I didn't see it coming. I should have seen it coming, but I didn't, because I was so self-centered in my own stuff that it was never even occurred to me. I'm 11 years sober. I find out that she's talking to a guy in Kentucky. I'm as far away from a drink probably as I've ever been, because I started drinking right when I was 11. And I find myself in Kentucky with the biggest resentment in the world, ready to kill somebody. And during that time, what had happened was I had a panic attack at work. I never had one. I didn't understand what was going on, but I thought I was dying. I'm running through the halls of this bank, ripping my shirt off like a fucking dying. You know, they sent me to an outpatient mental institution. my bank made me go there, and I wouldn't take any of the medication because I was afraid I was going to relapse. I absolutely refused it, and I was basically having a nervous breakdown. But I didn't know what was happening at the time. I just knew like I was going absolutely nuts. I wound up having panic disorder. I couldn't sleep at night. All kinds of crazy stuff was going on. And I went to Kentucky, and it's a crazy story, because I went up, I knew what I was doing. I just didn't know what the result was going to be. I drove to Kentucky. I got cash out. I was like, I showed up at the guy's work. You know, I mean, they called the cops. Like, all kinds of bad stuff were happening. And I'm like sober, but I'm not sober. I'm crazy, right? I'm absolutely crazy at this point. I don't know how to get out of it. I started taking the medication, and it wasn't working. About 2005, and 2 weeks later, I'm thinking about a drink, right? And from the time I thought about a drink to the first drink that I took after a little over 11 years sober, it was 2 weeks. And the first night I drank, I was down the shore with a bunch of people that drank all the time, and I was the last person up. And it wasn't because I drank more, it was because I couldn't stop. You know what I mean? They were like going to bed. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, let's go. I'm ready. I'm back. You know what I mean? The next night I was back in Philly, in North Philly, which I didn't have any contacts, you know, like I did before, and I'm back hopping. So within 2 week period, the thought came to me. I drank. And before I drank, I remember this thought, I remember thinking this, like really, really, my thought was this: I know it's going to get bad, but I'll get sober in a year. I know I can get sober. I'll go back to AA and I'll get sober. Well, guess what? That didn't happen. I had a 10-year relapse. At that point in my life, I had accumulated a pretty lot of stuff because I worked my way up through the bank. I wasn't rich or anything like that. And I don't say it like, in my mind, I was rich, but not even rich, but I was doing okay. Like, I had a nice house. I had a bank account. I had 401k. I had a retirement. I had all that stuff. And within 3 years, all that was gone. I drank my bank account away. My house is foreclosed on. They threw everything I own out. I couldn't get off the bar stool. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. when I was going back, I started going back to meetings like almost rapidly, right? So when you hit a bottom, you know, there's one bottom and then the next bottom and the next one. The first bottom is I relapsed, right? The next bottom is I lost my job. The next bottom is blah, blah, blah. You know, it just keeps going on down the line. When I going back to meetings, it was pretty quickly. It was within about 3 or 4 months I'd started going back. And my old sponsor was in a meeting. And this was like a scary dude. He had like 24 years that I knew at the time. That was like about 6 or 7 years before that. Well, it turned out he relapsed. And he looked like hell. He didn't look good. But he was back for about a year. And I asked him to sponsor me. And he kept saying, like, I'm going to get you through the steps. But I couldn't go like 7 days. Like, I would go into a meeting and I would hear like the normal stuff that I had heard before, which was like, don't drink no matter what, right? 90 meetings in 90 days, all that kind of stuff. And I would leave a meeting and I would feel fine. And I would wind up drunk the next day. And I didn't understand what was happening. I really didn't. I had no idea. I knew when I put alcohol in me, I didn't have a shutoff valve. I knew that. There was no doubt about that. But I didn't understand why I could leave a meeting, be totally fine, and go drink. I couldn't understand why I could go to 6 straight meetings in a row and on the 7th day drink. And it wasn't even, I was aware of when I would get an obsession. When I would get an obsession, it would feel like a craving. My entire body would long for it. But I wasn't getting obsessions. I was just driving. And I would wind up at a bar. And it was so baffling to me. That went on and on and on for the next 3 or 4 years. And like I said, my house got foreclosed on. I showed up at my dad. I moved back to Northeast Philly. My house was down there. I moved back to Northeast Philly at my grandma's house because I needed somewhere to stay because they were foreclosing on my house. And I was trying to avoid it. I went up hooking up with a woman, and I basically used her. Like, I wasn't in love with her. I didn't love her, and she had borderline personality disorder of the umpteenth degree. I'm just going to demonstrate for you how sick I was. She stabbed me with a butcher knife a couple years after that. We had been together for off and on for a while. She stabbed me with a butcher knife on December 22nd, and I was back at her house on December 24th. Right? So I got alcoholism, I got drug addiction, now I got codependency. And I actually believe, like, I'm going to save her. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I can't even save myself. Listen, it was like the craziest thing. I was back at her house on the 24th, and I was cleaning up my blood so her daughter could come over for Christmas. Like, you kidding me? Like, what's wrong with you, dude? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm telling you, I was absolutely insane. So that went on for a couple of years. Every dime I had. Now, that I stopped stealing. When I got sober when I was 19 years old, I said my big thing was I'm not going to steal anymore. So I didn't steal anymore. But I used everyone I could. You know what I mean? I borrowed as much as I could. Every dime that I had that I worked for, at this point I'm doing construction. Can't find a job. Can't find a job in a good, in a profession that I was in before. Not that it was good or bad, but a profession I was in before. I'm laboring for $15 an hour. I'm 40 years old. Like, I think, like, to me, the best day was when I got paid that day. Because I could go out and get drunk that night. You know what I mean? Like, that's just kind of how my life was going. I'd still been in and out of AA. I would go in and I thought, and there was another thought that came to me. If I could get 30 days, I'd be good. Right? Because that's just kind of like a 30 day, like 90 days, 30 days. I'm like, if I get 30 days, I'd be good. So I checked myself into to an outpatient rehab. And I got 31 days. And I was driving, and I don't even know what happened. I really don't. I just had a thought, and boom, I was in a bar. Again. Over and over and over. I can tell you of so many instances that happened. There was another time that, right after that time, when I drank and I drugged, I went on binges, right? If I had money in my pocket, I drank till it was gone, and then I tried to borrow some off of you. I went to the bar and I asked him to front me. I think I had a $600 tab at one point at like a little shit old bar. I showed up at my friend's house on Easter. And she's not an alcoholic and her husband's not an alcoholic. But I showed up and we drank and we had a good time or whatever. And I woke up in the middle of the night and I thought I was having a heart attack. Right? And so I drove myself to the hospital. But as I'm driving myself to the hospital, I'm doing drugs and I'm drinking alcohol. Going to the hospital, they do an EKG. I don't have a heart attack, but she says your blood pressure's high. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm gonna go out and smoke a cigarette. And I left. Right? Like any good alcoholic would do. Turns out 3 days later, I was back in the hospital because my right lung was fully collapsed. That's what woke me up. My lung collapsed. My left lung was half full of fluid, and I could barely walk up the hill into the hospital. And so that's just a demonstration of like how sick I was. Like the only thing that mattered to me was drinking and drugging. No matter what, I didn't care. If you got in the way of it, you were out. You know what I mean? Like I didn't have anything to do with you. When we were going later on, we were going through the steps. You know, I could talk about how much I lost, and talk about the years, and talk about the material possessions. But the real bad thing about it was my separation from my family. During that 10-year relapse, I didn't talk to my mom for years. And the reason I didn't talk to her is because she was going to want me to get help. I used to call her on Christmas morning early because I knew she'd be drinking the night before. And I would leave her a quick voicemail because I knew she wouldn't pick up. And that would be it. I abandoned my family, right? My family now became the bar. It became a drug dealer. It became people that drank and drug like I did. I was at my grandma's one time. It was right after Christmas, and I was upstairs, and my mom showed up. I was 43 years old. My mom showed up, and I heard her downstairs, and I got my little cousin to tell her to go into the kitchen so I could run out the door. And that's what I did. I ran out the door. I'm 43 years old, and I'm running from my mom because she's going to get in the way of my drinking. And all she wanted was for me to get sober. All she wanted for me was to be happy. She provided for me. She was my mother, and I totally abandoned her. My story kind of doesn't really accelerate, but basically the same thing went on. And 2.5 years ago, I showed up at my dad's house in New Hope with 2 gym bags, a piece of shit car, and like 70 cents in my pocket. I just said, I'm tired. I need help, you know? And my dad, he's got like 28 years, maybe I guess 29 years now. He got sober because I got sober when I was 17. My stepmom was going to kick him out. But anyway, so I show up at my dad's house, and of course he brings me in, and I get right back into AA. I do a 90-90. Not only do a 90-90, I do 6 months and 6 months. I don't miss a meeting for every day. I get a sponsor. It turns out my sponsor has 42 years. I got him not because he had 42 years. I got him because he sounded like something. He had something that I wanted, right? He was really serene. He was like a different level. And I got my best friend in there had 25 years and he was my age. And so I'm right in the middle of AA. I got like the dream team of AA around me, right? Like I'm away from drugs and alcohol. I'm right from Philadelphia. Because I had always thought that if I could get away from alcohol, people, places, things, my life would start to occur like it occurred 10 years ago, 15 years ago. My life would turn around. And it did. It did for like 2 or 3 months. I wound up getting a job in the healthcare field with a drug and alcohol rehab, believe it or not. I don't know how. I'm still trying to figure out how that happened. But I'm 6 months, 4 months sober, going to meetings every day, and I start waking up with these obsessions and like very, very serious resentments. And I don't even know I'm in a resentment because I didn't know what a resentment was. I thought a resentment was like when I go back and slash your tires. I didn't realize a resentment's like replaying the same thing over and over and over in your head with anger. That had gone on for like 4 months. I woke up one day. I went to a meeting. It was Mother's Day, actually. And I was driving down to see my mom, and she called me and canceled. And the second she canceled, I had like the worst obsession I ever had. I called 2 people in the program, like I'm taught to do. I talked to them for 45 minutes. I couldn't get out of my own way. I drove to the bar, drove from the bar to, crying, I'm praying. I sat in front of, I begged God to remove the obsession, and then I walk in and drank. Because it was my mind knows it's the only thing that's going to relieve that. Is a drink. I know it intuitively. I've been doing it my whole life. I walked in and got a drink. By the time the bartender, I ordered 2 shots and a beer. Went to put the bottle down. I said, double up. So within like 10 seconds, I drank 4 shots and a beer. That night was a little bit of a blur. I got in an accident. The usual stuff happened. Woke up the next day and I called somebody and said, I don't know what to do. And they said, get back in AA. And that's what I did. The problem was, I knew I drank. And I knew, based on my previous experience, it was going to come back sooner, quicker, harder, faster, all that kind of stuff. Like, I knew I was in deep shit, right? 2 weeks later, I'm driving, same thing. Obsession comes back. And this is like a real obsession, not just a thought, like an obsession. I make a call, can't get out of it, go back to Philly, drink, drug, get a place on the boulevard. The next morning, I swear to God, I was not going to drink in the morning. It was 5:15 a.m. I woke up. I started drinking. I made a call. And I don't know if I was working. I work with a gentleman named Jay Utes. He's from up here. I think somebody in here probably knows him. He called me. I'm on the boulevard. And he's like, let me come get you. I'll come pick you up and take you to rehab. I'm like, whoa, slow down. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I'm ready yet. Man. You know what I mean? Like, it's only 6 a.m. You're jumping the gun a little bit here. But I drank for about another hour. And I don't know what happened, but I called him back and I said, come get me. I can't do this. And did it. Stopped what he was doing and drove down on the boulevard. And I drove my car to a buddy's house, left it there. Made him pick up alcohol on the way down because I'm not going to rehab without drinking on the way. You know, that type of thing. But we went to rehab and I was like, I was beaten up, man. I would have moved to Burma. I really would have. Like, I would have done anything at that time to stop, to have the obsession removed. Just stop it. Please stop it. I mean, it was 24/7 in the resentments all the time. I couldn't get out of my own way. I was kneeling down in the night of praying. Nothing was happening. I'm Catholic, so I would just kneel and just say to Our Father and beg God to do something because I can't do this. Like, I'm going to meetings. I can't figure out why I can't get out of my own way. I'm in rehab. I'm, 45 years old. Like, how the hell is this happening all over again? 4 days later, I'm ready to leave rehab. 4 days. Well, my best thinking took 3.5 days for me to want to jet rehab. I went and talked to a counselor that night, and I picked her for a reason because she's a no bullshit counselor. She's honest, and she'll tell you the truth, right? So I went in and I told her. I said, I'm getting ready to leave, and I had like this grand plan in my head, like I'm going to go back to AA and this and that. And she said, look at you, you're obsessed, and you're going to go drink. And I don't know what happened. I really don't. I don't know. I had some type of insight or come to Jesus moment, but I was like, you're right. And I went back to my room and I prayed. And I had said this prayer a lot of times. See, I left a lot of stuff out. See, during my insanity, at one point I was doing what's called guarding the host. And I was going to Catholic church at 2 a.m. and I was watching the host for an hour. I was doing all kinds of stuff before. I prayed a million times crying, God, please help me. I mean, over and over. I used to go home. I used to drink alone at the end of the night. And I would go home and I would put on music and I would smoke my cigarettes and I would drink my beer and I would drink whatever and I would cry. And I would beg God to get me out of where I am. And it didn't happen. My obsessions had never left. I'd always gone back to alcohol. I went back to my room in the middle of my obsession to leave. And I got on my knees, and I just knew I was completely fucked. I knew nothing was going to work. And I had a real, real deep-seated fear and a real understanding of powerlessness because AA was not going to work. Rehab definitely wasn't going to work because I was ready to leave. And I just asked God to help me. I just said, please, please help me. And at that moment, I hate to say it, but my obsession started to leave. It just started to go away. And I became aware that I aligned my will with God's will. I was really, really acutely aware of that what I had just done, because I had inner conflict about leaving, and I knew that once I surrendered, I just gave up fighting. Like, I just was like, done fighting. Like, all right, whatever. Just please help me. And it went away. So then now I became aware that I aligned my will with God's will, and that perhaps if I could continue to do that, that maybe something will happen for me. The next night, a guy came in that had 11 years. He gave a big book study. And I was watching him, and I had 11 years, and I was never like this guy. Like, you ever talk to somebody that's real serene, and they're kind of like in a spiritual plane, and you're like, how the hell did they get there, and all that kind of stuff? That was the guy that was talking to me. So I went up and talked to him afterwards, and he started talking about the big book. Now, I got out of the rehab, and I did the same thing I always did. I went right back to AA. I'm back at my dad's. I'm in the center again. But I got to be honest with you. I had a shitload of fear because I knew it was coming. I just didn't know when it was coming, right? I was at Sunday night meditation meeting at Doylestown Hospital, and a guy I had never seen after. I only saw him one night. He heard me speak, and he came up to me and said, I know a guy giving a big book study at his house. Why don't you go there? And I said, what's his address? Right? Because at that point, they talk about openness and willingness in the big book, and I was willing to do anything. I mean, literally anything. I surrendered. I thought I had surrendered before, but this time I would have done anything anyone told me to do to stay sober. And so that's what I did. I showed up at this guy's house. The guy started talking, and when he was talking about me. He He was talking about his past, but he was talking about my present. You know what I mean? Like, I'm fucked. I don't know what's going on here, but I know I'm going to drink, and I don't know when it's coming, but it's coming. There's no doubt about it. I talked to him after the meeting, and I said, look, I said, I gave him a little bit of my history, and I said, I don't know what to do. Like, I really don't. He said, why don't I come over to your house, and I'll take you through the big book. All right. I'll try anything, right? It was me and three other guys. We were Friday nights. He was coming over every Friday night. And the other three guys didn't, I don't think they drank. I know two of them. They didn't make it through the big book like I did. But I was like, I was committed. I was willing. So we started going through the big book. He started showing up on Friday night. We started going through the doctor's opinion. I started learning about my disease. I knew I didn't have a shut-off valve. I didn't know what's termed a spirit analogy. I had no idea. I grew up in an Irish Catholic alcoholic family. If you didn't drink the way we drank, you were abnormal. You know what I mean? Like, the people that were like, oh, I don't want another one. I'm too tipsy. I got to drive. Like, what are you talking about, dude? Like, what's wrong with you? You know what I mean? Like, the way I drank was normal to me. I started learning about the allergy and about the mental obsession and about my sickness. I didn't realize that the mental obsession I thought was only when I had that really intense craving, even when I didn't have alcohol in me, because there were sometimes it would hit me and it would feel like I was going to die if I didn't get a drug or a drink. But it also takes another form, which is the mental blank spot, which is there are times that the thought can come into my head and I don't have any mental, there's no effective mental defense for me. And that was what was happening to me. And I started to correlate these things. So we were going through that. And I also thought unmanageability was, my life was unmanageable because I got another DUI. I mean, I had a DUI at one point. I went to court drunk. I had Joe Kelly in Philly, and he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, you're drunk. I'm like, no, I'm not. He's like, fucking look at you, dude. You're smashed. I'm like, all right, you got me. You know what I mean? Like, and of course, that night, I was only going out for a couple of beers, and I was leaving the bar at 10 o'clock, but I never left the bar at 10 o'clock. I left the bar at 2:30 when they closed, and then I always made sure I had alcohol to take back with me and drink all night. That's the type of delusional thinking I was in, that tonight was going to be different. Because once a year or twice a year, I would get lucky, and I would go out to the bar, and I would leave at 10, and I would get up for work the next day. But that was like every 5 years. But I would hang on to that, like, tonight's the night, that's going to happen. But it never happened. It never, ever happened. So I thought my unmanageability was about, hey, I got a DUI, I lost a job. I thought it was a result of my drinking. I didn't know I was unmanageable before I started drinking, right? I can't handle, the issue was never drinking with me, and I didn't know that. The issue was sobriety. I can't handle sobriety. I can't pull enough out of the day to stay content, at peace, right? I didn't know that at the time. So we started going through this big book, and I'm getting these aha moments. And when he's leaving, I'm going back and rereading the big book. We're going through chapter by chapter, word by word, and he's had me write shit down. I'm going back and read it, and I'm literally like, oh my God, this is blowing me away. This is exactly my story. Like, everything in there I could relate to. We go through first step, second step. I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity because he was telling my story, right? And then we get to the third step. And he has me kneel, and I'm like, oh, here we go. You know what I mean? Like, we kneel in my living room, and we do a third step. And that was like exactly something I would not have done before because I was never going to be handing out pamphlets on the corner talking about God. It was never going to happen. I was never going to be knocking on your door saying, hey, can I show you this? You know what I mean? Like, that's what I thought that people did that went to the big book. I had a very serious prejudice against the big book. And I don't know why I did other than it seemed that the people that were presenting it to me had a real strong emotional reaction for it. And I didn't need that because I knew everything, right? So we got down on my knees and I did the third step and nothing happened. Like, what's going on here? Like, isn't this supposed to be when this thing occurs? Then we got in the fourth step, and I started looking at myself in a different way. I'd done a bunch of four steps before. In fact, I had just done a four step about 9 months before I relapsed with my sponsor that had 42 years, and he did it the exact way my other sponsors did it. I went through the four step. I cried a lot. I complained about what people did to me, and he said, oh, you did a good job, and patted me on the head, and nothing happened, right? So we started going through the fourth step, and I started really seeing where my defects of character were showing up. They say that self-centeredness and selfishness is the main crux of our problem. I believe that today. And that's where it was showing up mostly, right? Resentments, judgments, fear, all over the place, fear. Fear drives everything practically I do. In fact, when I was asked to speak here, like a half an hour is nothing, right? I'm like, oh, yeah, no big deal. I'll speak. And then he goes, it's an hour. And I'm like, Scooby-Doo. I'm like, Like, what do you mean? An hour? You know what I mean? Like, whoa, hold on. Time out here. I go, let me think about this. I'll call you back. I hung up the phone. Fear, like, went through me, like, boom. And then my mind started racing immediately. I just got done meditating for 25 minutes. I was as serene as I'm ever going to be in my entire life. I get asked to speak in a meeting to help other alcoholics. They tell me it's an hour, and holy shit, the world's blowing up, right? My mind went, I'm sure my mind won't stop racing. That's like, that's me. That's how I, that's my mind. That's what I'm working with here. Instead of thinking that, hey, I might be able to help an alcoholic, my thought automatically went to, how can I sound good? Right? It's just automatic. It just happens with me. The difference is now I'm aware of it. And what I did was I went back and I prayed and I meditated. I prayed and I meditated tonight because guess what? Since Thursday night to today, my mind has not stopped. Now, I don't try and stop it. I kind of redirect it to prayer and I don't go along with the story, but it's just the way I'm built. And it's okay today. This is one of the things I've been awakened to. So we're going through the fourth step and I'm writing about this big resentment I have because my wife left me. Right? She left me for another man. Because that's the story. But it's not really what happened. See, the real story is my wife stuck with me for 10 years trying to make our marriage work. And I was too blind to see it. I was stuck in untreated alcoholism. It's not my fault. I don't have any guilt about it. I'm in the process of making my amends. So I'm writing about my wife leaving this to go with this guy. And I had a ton of resentment up to then, and I could feel it. It was leaving my body. Like, literally, like, and this is happening over and over. And the way we did the fourth step was a tiny bit different than it's in the big book. We created all these characters and stuff. And so it kind of really blows up your ego and you can see it in a different way. But I'm literally writing and I'm getting like a spiritual experience as I'm writing because I never had this before. I never had freedom from the shit that's binding me. I never had freedom from my imprisonment. I'm writing and I'm telling you, and he started seeing it before me because I kept telling him. Now we're like 3 months into this. I'm like, this ain't going to work. This isn't going to work. He's like, dude. Look at you, like you're not in a resentment anymore. He sort of had to point it out to me because I really didn't. I mean, even 3 or 4 months in, 5 months in, I know it's coming, right? I didn't actually get in touch with the spiritual awakening until I started helping other people. But anyway, so we go through the fourth step, we do the fifth step, and he presents his list to me. And it's entirely different than my fifth step before, right? Because he's got all my character defects listed out in there. And then he tells me to go back and sit for an hour. And I sit for an hour, and I review all the proposals, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Did I leave anything out? I didn't leave anything out. I left everything on the table. I wrote down. I did everything that man told me to do. Everything. There wasn't one thing he told me to do that I did not do, and I did not do, like, overboard, probably. Every time I called him and picked up the phone, everything he told me to do, I did. If he told me to stand on my head, if he told me to do this, I did it. Because he was sober, and he was me. I knew he was me. So we go through the fifth step, he hands him this list, and I go and I do the sixth and the seventh. And I don't really feel any, there's no like one moment where like I have an experience. There's just not. But I started to recognize that I felt different. It was just, and that was a pretty quick period of time. We're talking like 3 months maybe. I get into the eighth step and I do the list, right? And on the list, there's three nevers. One's my wife. One's my wife's husband, right? Yeah, I never make amends with him. And one was a person, a house I was breaking into as a kid because I had some fear about it. But anyway, so that's one of the nevers. So I go out and I start making some of the little amends that I had, right, that I knew I could make. So I'm going out and making them. I'm driving back one time from an amends, and I swear to God, it felt like I was high. I was so free. I called him, and I'm like, dude, I don't know what's going on, but I kind of feel fucking weird. Like, I really don't. Like, I had no idea what was going on. You know what it was? It was freedom. It was freedom from my alcoholism. And he had to point that out to me because I really didn't know what it was. I felt completely like, I almost felt like I was losing my mind. Like, is this what's supposed to be happening? Because I'm not going back to that. There's no more drugs for me. You know, no more any of that kind of stuff. So anyway, we get into 9 and then he takes me into 10. I start doing a 10-step during the day. It takes me an 11. I start doing 11-step every night. I did 11-step every night. The last month, I've done it about 75% of the time. This is over the past year. So I've been doing 11-step the whole time. But the real awakening for me was the 12-step when I started helping other people. And I started taking somebody else through the big book the way he took me. I can remember the first time I had a lot of fear about it, right? Because I don't know what I'm talking about, and I know this ain't going to work for them, and blah, blah, blah. And he told me, he said, Patrick, you're living in the steps. Like, you live in them. You know them inside out. My mind, my ego, tells me that whatever I'm doing is not good enough, or it's the best ever. Right? Like, I know the big book more than anybody, but not as well as anyone in here. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing. So that's what happened. I started taking somebody through the big book. When I started taking somebody through the big book, I had a much deeper understanding of what my spiritual malady was and what my spiritual awakening is. Because I was telling them things that were in the big book that were applied to me. See, like I said, I'm a chronic relapse, and I can't even tell you how many times I've relapsed. I don't know what is even considered a relapse these days. If it's, I've heard 90 days before, I've heard 2 weeks, I've heard if you don't want to drink, I don't know. But I'm a chronic relapser, and I learned through this process that I have a spiritual malady. That malady to me shows up in self-centeredness and selfishness, but the real malady is a separateness from God, right? And a separateness from God's people, God's children, you. I'd always felt separated even at a young age. One of the things that my sponsor taught me to do was pray. I never knew how to pray. I got on my knees for about 32 seconds before I jumped into bed and said, "In our Father, God, please help me, blah, blah, blah." In the morning, I did the same thing. "God, keep me sober today," and that was pretty much it. He taught me how to pray, and the way I pray today is I get quiet. I get really quiet and settled first, and then I go into my prayer. My prayer today is about 7 or 8 minutes long. At any rate, the spiritual malady for me is a separateness from God, a separateness from the people. When I started taking somebody through the book, I didn't feel separate. I started recognizing that I'm not separate. We're exactly the same. My sickness is your sickness, to whatever degree yours is and what mine is. We have the same malady. The spiritual awakening for me was was really just an awakening that there's a God in my life, that it's a fact today that God is present with me right now. I had no idea what I was going to say when I walked up here. I really didn't. I thought about what to say over and 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 over, but I kept stopping it. I didn't go through my whole story. I've never talked for 45 minutes before or an hour. I had absolutely no idea. I trust in God that whatever needs to be conveyed, God's going to convey through me. To me, that's the spiritual awakening, an awareness that God is in my life today. I do a lot of service work. I love it. I love low bottom alcoholics. I love the fucking nuts. I swear to God in my life I do. There's nothing that pleases me more than helping or trying to help an alcoholic that is a chronic relapser. Because I'm uniquely qualified, right? Some people come in, we're many and varied. Some people come in and get it the first time, second time, third time. Some people it takes 30 years. I don't know. Maybe I'm one that takes 30 years. I know today I'm sober, right? I don't have the spiritual malady. The thing about the spiritual malady is it says in the book is when that's corrected, we straighten out physically and mentally. Physically, I don't have an allergy because I don't put alcohol in me. Mentally, I don't have a mental obsession because I was always trying to connect with something. My obsessions were based on the fact that I needed to feel whole in some way, whatever that is, whether it was golf, whether it was drugs, whether it was alcohol, whether it was porn, whether it was women, whatever that was. Now that I have a connection with a God, with a power greater than myself, these obsessions went away. They're not here anymore. They're gone. The other thing that I do is I do meditate. I meditate daily. I kind of align with the Eastern philosophy of Buddhism and that. And I'm still Catholic. In fact, I went to confession 3 weeks ago, and I lied to the priest in confession. I did. I went in, and I couldn't think of a really, really bad sin, and it was premarital sex. And he's like, "Oh, you have premarital sex?" I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "You got a Bible?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Do this or this." And I walked out. I'm like, "I don't have a Bible." You know what I mean? Like, that didn't go well. You know what I mean? Like, I just went to confession to feel better, and I feel worse. So I still seek. But one of the things about these spiritual, about the 12 steps is I always thought that they were geared only for alcoholics. And from what I've seen and what I've been able to gather, all the religions of the world are all the same. They're teaching all the same principles. Right? And so when I meditate, I try and just concentrate on my breathing. Sometimes I bring God into it and I just think about God. one of the people that I kind of follow or I look up to is a guy named Thich Nhat Hanh. He's a Buddhist, but what he says is the way out is in, right? And it is. And we have these 12 steps to show us the way out. For myself, when I went through the 12 steps, I had a different picture of me. I started understanding what my spiritual sickness was. I started taking steps to clear the wreckage, all the delusions, all the lies that I've been telling myself for however long. And then I kept going with it. I can't explain how grateful I am for AA today. I do a shitload of service work. And I don't say it with a pumped up chest. I really don't. I say it because it keeps me sober. And I don't do it to keep me sober. I do it because I have a solution to the person that is an alcoholic. Right? Because I come in, there's nothing wrong with don't drink no matter what. It's good advice. Right? It is. But it got me drunk for a long time. Because that's all I knew. Don't take the first drink, you can't get drunk. That got me drunk for a long time. It's great advice. There's nothing wrong with the advice. There's a story that goes around in Denver about an Indian. I don't know if anyone's heard it. About an Indian who went to AA. And he heard that. And like 3 or 4 months later, he went into the bar and he ordered 2 drinks. He ordered 2 shots. 1 shot he put to the side. The other shot he drank. He drank out of the left hand the whole night. And finally, the bartender came over to him and said, "What about that shot you ordered first?" And he said, "I went to AA." And he told me the first... If I don't take the first drink, I can't get drunk. There's no end to our insanity. Right? There isn't. So I started also realizing that the first drink doesn't get me drunk. You know what gets me drunk? My state of mind that tells me to go take the first drink. Right? So I can't tell you how grateful I am to AA for giving me a life that's useful. When I showed up at my dad's, I didn't show up because I lost everything. I showed up because I was useless. I was sitting in my buddy's house. He was in Ireland, and I drank pretty much all his liquor cabinet. I had nothing left. I didn't even want to go to the bar. And I didn't even want to quit drinking necessarily. I just wanted to be useful because I felt so useless in my life. And so I have a usefulness now that I've never had before. I'm able to help other people, other alcoholics. I take them through the big book. I don't understand why a lot of times they don't have the same willingness and open-mindedness that I have. But I got to remember, I was them, right? I was them at one time in the past. I had a guy that I had taken through the steps pretty much all the way through in rehab. And he came out of rehab and he wound up using. He OD'd twice. I picked him up in North Philly. He OD'd once, got Narcan. I picked him up in North Philly. He was driving him to rehab. He came back out. He crashed his car twice in 3 days. Pins in his face, two broken eye sockets, this and that. You figure he'd be done, right? His mom's calling me all the time. I'm hooking him up with an interventionist because I was sponsoring the guy. And after all that, he drank like 3 days later, right? There's no end to our insanity. We have this mind, or I have this mind, and he has it. I can relate to him, that will convince myself that it's okay to drink tonight. Tonight's going to be different, right? And so... So I'm grateful today for that. I don't have that anymore. It's gone. And it's only gone because somebody was kind enough to take me through the steps, through the big book, stick with me, answer the phone when I'm calling, when I'm crazy, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, I hope somebody was able to get something out of that tonight. That's all I got. Thank you.